Elizabeth Barrett is a wife, mother, licensed marriage and family therapist, educator, eavesdropper, and emotion worker. She uses all these skills to address the subjects that we all struggle with in this conversation with the reluctant therapist. Good afternoon, Elizabeth.
Good afternoon, Jordan. Nice to see you sitting over there.
Nice to see you, too.
You know, I'm excited about today, and I feel like that's redundant because I'm excited every Tuesday when I get here. Because every week we do something that's fun and different. We have a topic or a conversation that goes off in a timely direction. But I'm excited today because I'm not alone in the studio. I have you, Jordan, and I also have our summer intern, Ashlyn Hatch, with me. And we are going to have a conversation in studio. So we're going to do things a little differently. We're not going to be taking phone calls today, and we're going to actually kind of keep it in-house. But I think this is going to be a topic that's going to resonate with a lot of different people because I think in some time in our lives, we've all are touched with transitions, with changing times in our life and being prepared for those changes in our life or not being prepared. And how do we adjust? How do we move into new situations gracefully or not so gracefully, but ultimately find our way? And so because it's that time of year where we're going back to school, a lot of schools have already started. College students are getting ready to leave. Those who are on the semester system, I think, are already off to school. My daughter Kelly starts a little later. She'll be leaving in September. But we're thinking about, you know, that college experience and leaving for college freshmen or incoming freshmen. I know this is a time of high anxiety, what to expect, leaving home, packing things up, what do I need? And if you've been down that path of the college, first-time college experience, it's overwhelming because everything is a must-have, you know, from all of the things to have the perfect dorm. If you get Pottery Barn and all the different catalogs, it's the must-have sheets and the must-have blankets, and then you have to have the right towels and lamps, and it's just a lot. And then, of course, it's finding your classes and your financial aid, and then what you must have as far as a bicycle or transportation. It's endless, the list. And it can become kind of frightening. And then for those college students who've been there for a year or so, it's the going back. Now they're on their own a little bit, getting more settled into school and feeling more independent from home. And so as parents, we're adjusting every year to how our students change. For moms that are sending their children off to school for the first time for preschool or kindergarten, there's the letting go and the adjustment. So anyone who's been a parent can appreciate that passage, that rite of passage for every school transition. From elementary school into middle school, that can be a rough transition. From middle school into high school, you know, each of these passages of time bring about similar feelings of anxiety and fear and also joy and excitement and the possibilities of growth and becoming a new person. And then there are those of you who are going through the college search process, who have high schoolers who are from freshman year thinking about which classes they're going to take and what schools they'd want to look at and what grades they need to get. It is an all-consuming proposition. So I thought it would be fun today to talk to a couple seasoned veterans of the college process and the transitioning even from college into life as a single independent working person. So I invited Ashlyn, who is going into her junior year at Reed College in Portland, Oregon.
Yeah.
And then Jordan, who is on our news team here at KCBX, but is a college graduate who has been living independently on her own for a few years, supporting herself, to come in and talk about their experience through the high school transition, managing classes, picking the college, choosing the colleges they chose, and navigating college, and kind of add some helpful hints for those who are in the process, how to maybe streamline or make more smoothly the transition for them. So welcome, Jordan. Welcome, Ashlyn.
Thanks.
So let's start off with Ashlyn, whom I've known since she was probably 9 years old, doing musical theater in the area. And she's gone through the local schools here and graduate of Arroyo Grande High School. And now you're a junior at Reed. Tell me a little bit about how you chose Reed. Let's start with the process of high school and choosing classes. And what was your dream school and how did you get to Reed?
So when I was in high school, I started out thinking, okay, I need to get all the best grades that I possibly can so that I can get into the most prestigious school that I possibly can. And I took as many AP classes as I possibly could. And it was a really, really stressful process. It became incredibly competitive between me and my classmates. And it's very difficult, I think, when you're trying to maintain friendships and then also you're competing so intensely academically. And somewhere in the middle of that process, I found that it just really wasn't healthy for me as a human to be operating like that 24/7.
So what time was this? Freshman year, sophomore year? What process did you say, I'm working so hard?
I think it was probably maybe between junior year and the beginning of senior year when I was thinking, man, I'm just so tired of this. I'm so tired of every single conversation I have with my friends being about our grades. I'm so tired of our entire social circle revolving around what we got on our AP tests. And I realized that up until that point, the colleges that I was aiming to get into would likely have resulted in being an extension of that sort of social vibe.
The competitiveness. Mm-hmm. That you were experiencing in high school, you knew if you went to those colleges, that competition would still be there.
Yeah.
So there was never a time that you were just going to relax and enjoy being a student, basically.
Yeah. And so when I started looking at colleges to actually apply to, I shifted the focus that I had had my freshman, sophomore, beginning of junior year, which had been on, you know, the UCs and some of the like Ivy type schools. And I decided to apply to more small liberal arts schools, which I looked into and just saw, wow, there seems to definitely be a focus on academics. And much as I really didn't enjoy the very competitive academic environment that was going on at Reed, I really do love academics. And I enjoyed my classes and learning and connecting with my teachers. And I was hoping that there was going to be some sort of school that I could find that would give me a nice balance. And that actually is when I stumbled upon Reed. I was looking very non-committally at colleges because I didn't want to fall in love with a place before I got in. I didn't.
And that's tip number one, right?
Yeah. I would say one of my biggest application tips would be when you're looking at colleges, peruse the website enough to know that you would like to go there. Look at their admission materials enough to understand that, yeah, if I got in here, I would probably go. But maybe don't let yourself have a number one star, 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 check, plus, plus, plus choice, because that can result in being way more of a letdown than it ever needs to be, especially if you've never gone to visit the school, you've never lived there, you don't know really that it would be your first choice. And I think people really do end up being where they need to be, but sometimes there's so much unnecessary disappointment that comes along in that journey.
So you did not visit Reed then until after you got the acceptance letter?
Yeah. So I figured, yeah, if I get into Reed, if it's the only school I got into, I'd probably like to go there. And then I got into a couple different schools, and Reed was one of the first ones that I visited, and I absolutely fell in love once I was on campus. And I actually remember talking to Elizabeth before I went on that visit, and we had been talking about, because I did still apply to some UCs, you know, just following the path that I had originally set for myself. Why not? Did the applications, got into some of them. And I had been talking to Elizabeth about sort of the schism that I had been feeling between the schools that I had originally wanted to apply to and the schools that I now had gotten into that were newly on my list, but I felt really called toward. And she said, you know, when you get on these campuses, you'll know. You'll get a feeling that you are surrounded by your people and that this is a place where you can really live and grow and thrive. And you'll just know. And that's absolutely what happened to me on Reed's campus. And I went and visited and found out that it's a place where the students do get grades, but grades aren't disclosed publicly to students. You have to go and ask for your grades from the registrar's office. And on your essays, you only get qualitative feedback. You don't get an A, B, C, D grade returned to you. And the academic competitiveness that I was really looking to avoid is virtually non-existent at Reed. And that atmosphere is completely reflected in sort of the social goings on around the school. There's a lot of unity around people wanting to take really hard classes, But not so much being in the who has the best grade in the class, who has 105%, who's going to get the A+. So yeah, Elizabeth was absolutely right. It was totally about feeling out the vibe of the school and where was going to be the best fit for me. And it ended up working out really well.
And it's interesting because tip number two, the lesson really is, if you're true to who you are, and I think we tend to send our students down a path that's very narrow. There's very little room for being unique or having independent interests, that it's very academically oriented in these AP courses to get into these schools. But from what Ashlyn's experience, you know, when you started being true to yourself, that you like academics, you like being challenged, but it wasn't, you know, your goal was not to be at the best school because of its statistics. You wanted to be at the best school for you. And I think that's hard to let go of for a lot of parents and for students, you know, having just sent my daughter through the process the year before, that I think as a parent, we buy into the cultural competition to be able to say where our kids are going to school. And I think it takes a lot of maturity and a lot of courage to step out and say, I'm going to look at my school opportunities because it needs to support who I am.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're just tuning in, this is A Conversation with the Reluctant Therapist. I'm Elizabeth Barrett. We're in studio today with my guests, Ashlyn Hatch and Jordan Bell. We're kind of offering up some tips for the college search, for living that first year at college. And then when you leave college, kind of what does that look like? How does that college education help you set yourself up into your adult life? We aren't taking phone calls today, but you can always be part of the conversation on our Facebook page, The Reluctant Therapist, or our website, thereluctanttherapist.com. You can send me an email to elizabeth@thereluctanttherapist.com. And previous shows are always available at kcbx.org under the News Talk tab. And we will be podcasting shortly. You can find us on iTunes and SoundCloud, so you can download to your devices and take us wherever you want to go. And that's thanks to Ashlyn for making that happen. Part of her summer vacation was getting the Reluctant Therapist into the modern world. So, Jordan, Tell us briefly, you know, about your college search and experience, and did your university experience turn out to be what you expected?
Well, no, it did not. I thought I wanted to be a teacher, mm-hmm. But I ended up studying journalism at Cal Poly, and I really like storytelling, and so that sort of fell into place. But my college search was... My parents didn't go to college, so my college search was based on the experiences of my peers and their siblings, and then one of my siblings went to college too. So she was very helpful in helping me decide based on region and what might be a good fit for my personality. I love school and I love learning, but I didn't have a very standard, like, type A approach to deciding what schools. I applied to schools that I thought would be a good fit, that I had visited the campuses and said, I like how I feel here.
Mm-hmm.
And then how I decided on – and I graduated from Cal Poly. I decided to go to Cal Poly because I did a pros and cons list.
Very pragmatic of you.
Yes.
And the journalism major mm-hmm. – there must have been people in your family who rolled their eyes a little bit about what are you going to do with this journalism major, or no?
No. Like, I think that was more from people who, my parents are very, I'm very lucky to have parents who are not asking me to take a job based on how much money I should make.
Mm-hmm.
They're pretty into the whole personal happiness. Yes, I think I'm sure maybe I got some feedback from some people that was like, well, what are you going to do with that? Do you know it's going to be hard to find a job? But no, I didn't receive any negative feedback from my family members for hoping to, you know, do that path.
Do something different.
Mm-hmm.
And so tip or advice, you know, for applying to colleges, I think both of you or all of us would agree that knowing your temperament and kind of understanding your playing field of interest, things that you'd be comfortable with, is a good way to kind of narrow it down and to broaden that search experience. Because I know with my college experience with Kelly and with my older daughter, that there are many, many more colleges out there that don't get the same press as that top 50 or top 100 schools. I mean, we're talking a couple thousand universities with a great variety of financial aid programs and also really unique courses of study. And I think Reed is one of those that pops up on lists, but not, you know, right away.
Yeah.
And the reputation and the scholarly environment has proven to be wonderful. But tell me, Ashlyn, what was the difference between what you took to college with you and expected and what you really needed that freshman year? So for those of you who are packing up to head off to college, what did you take with you and what did you really experience?
Well, so first and foremost, the academics were a lot different than I was expecting. Great, great, amazingly challenging courses at Reed. But in high school, what I had been used to was this idea of if you are doing well in a class, that you don't need any help with the class. And at Reed, that's just not true. The classes are hard and they're intentionally so. So you go into, say I went into freshman year chemistry. And even the people who are chemistry majors, which I am not, I am a theater major. even the people who are chemistry majors were getting significant amounts of help to do well in this course. So for me, it was definitely different than I expected to have to seek out support and assistance to make sure that I was doing my best in a class. Whereas in high school, you know, just if you were getting tutoring in a class, it was like, oh wow, you must be struggling.
So there's no shame in reaching out, and there's an expectation that you're going to utilize resources.
Yeah, absolutely. I had a tutor who I met with every week for chemistry, and I went to all the office hours. And I think honestly, most of the most successful students at my school do things like that. The ones who are very smart and probably could do fine in the class on their own, the way that they do a lot better than fine is by reaching out and getting support. And yeah, it's just run-of-the-mill thing that you do.
And so Jordan, how about you when you got to Cal Poly? What was the biggest surprise for you academically?
I'm thinking about being 19 and a freshman. I think I was surprised to be in a classroom full of people who were all, for the most part, exceptional students, because that was never an experience that you had in your everyday high school class. Obviously, when you go to college with people, you all are there for a certain reason, and that one, you're lucky enough to go to college, and two, you've chosen to go to this school, and so you have a lot in common. And so that was kind of weird, actually. Academically, I think that academically it was interesting to have professors. I think that was like the really interesting thing for me, because you have people who are experts, for the most part, experts in their field. And when you have that experience of having a professor who is very much into what they're teaching, you know, you feel that passion. And even if that's not your line of study and you're just taking a GE class, you can really enjoy it and gain from that experience just because of that person's love of knowledge of a particular subject.
And so tip number two, from the professor's standpoint, I always encourage my students to go in and make relationships with the professors, because I think it's a little intimidating when it's a professor and there's that they are an expert and maybe they seem untouchable or unreachable. But for all college students to make those relationships, wouldn't you say that getting to know a few professors, because you'll need letters of recommendation and you want to be able to go in and get help. And as someone who is a teacher, I grade my students' papers a bit differently when I know them. I have a face and a name and a personality attached to the tape, to the paper. So do you have any experience with that, of making those relationships, and does it make a difference?
Yeah, absolutely. So my faculty advisor has been just beyond important to me as a resource at Reed. I've taken some of her classes, but it's also just been great to go into her and talk about, hey, you know, my course load is feeling really heavy right now. What do you suggest? or ask her about a paper that I'm writing for another class. To have that touchstone professor who I can come to and say, hey, XYZ is really difficult right now, or I'm applying to this internship. What's your advice? Yeah, absolutely beyond value. I think it does take some time, right? And it's kind of scary when you're a freshman and you first show up on campus and you're like, oh my goodness, is this professor going to think that I'm crazy if I'm just lurking around their office? No. Your professors have office hours for a reason. They want you to come in there. They want to talk to you. They're at this school because they care about you as a student. And I think from what I gather, a lot of professors just really, really value those relationships that they're able to make with students and the help that they're able to give to students as they try and find their life path, whatever that may be.
True. And how about you, Jordan? Did you find any professors to be helpful outside of just the academic realm?
I'm thinking, so my senior year and my junior year, I took several poetry classes because I was fortunate to have extracurriculars that I had to fill within the College of Liberal Arts, and I really enjoyed taking poetry classes. And meeting with your professor, especially if you're taking a creative course, is crucial because, I mean, I think that people think of creativity in a certain way that it just, you know, happens, but it requires a lot of discipline. It requires a lot of work and a lot of shaping. And so when you're meeting with someone who's helping you out in your creative realm, they understand you. And they, like, I remember one of my poetry professors told me that, you know, it's my job to figure out what you're really good at and help you exploit that. And that's always stuck with me. So, and since it's been a little bit since I graduated from school, a lot of the academic stuff, you know, hasn't stuck with me as much as I think maybe Ashlyn, because she's in it right now. But I do remember having discussions with people that felt really valuable.
And I think that's another important piece, is that you may not remember the details of classes that you took, but you will remember conversations with professors that change your life in certain ways, that change the way you think or send you in a different direction. I think that's really ultimately for me what I want my children to experience in college and my students, is the broadening of their ability to be curious about the world. You know, that it's one thing to take in information and to be able to write a paper, but more importantly is to be curious about life in general, to broaden your scope of experiences so that when you get out into the world, you have the confidence to go in a lot of different directions. I'm Elizabeth Barrett, and this is A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist. If you've just tuned in, I'm having a conversation with my summer intern, Ashlyn Hatch, right before she leaves to return to school in Oregon, and with Jordan Bell, who is my show producer, about their experiences transitioning from young adult to adulthood, from high school student into college, trying to offer some tips, things that they've learned along the way to those of you who are sending your students off to college or even off to high school or out into the working world. Or if you're someone yourself who's going through these transitions, there's a lot of anxiety that's wrapped up around it. I think there's a lot of cultural messages about how to win at life. And I think we really, as we've talked this summer, kept saying, we need to let people know that there's not just one way to do this life thing. That there's a lot of different ways to approach college and feel successful in life and feel successful. So, Ashlyn, let's get to the nitty-gritty. I'm someone at home, you know, I'm a mom getting ready to take my child off to college, or I'm a college freshman waiting to leave. What was it like for you right before you left for school?
Right, what were before you feeling? I left for school. A lot of schools do these things where they have kids go in small groups outdoors on some sort of adventure right before school starts. And I did one of those. So it was just me and my mom who went before that started. And then my mom and dad were going to come back and help me move in after that. But I just remember feeling terrified. I had been so excited all summer, and everyone saying, oh, you're going to have such a great time. It's going to be the best time of your life. I'm so excited for you. There's been all this buildup the entirety of senior year through the application process and the acceptance process and all of these things. And, you know, finally I get to the point where all my bags are packed and all of my belongings have been shipped to the school, and I'm about to go for a couple days with a bunch of kids I don't know. And I am going to a school where I don't think anyone from my high school had attended in at least a couple decades. And I was just feeling terrified. I remember our plane was delayed, and I was thinking to myself, maybe I just don't want to go. Maybe I just want to stay home. I think that terror was just a natural rite of passage. I think we don't talk about the terror often. We talk about the happy feelings. We talk about parents being sad as they let their kids go. We talk about having such a great time during orientation week and making some of your best friends and getting your classes and continuing on. But I just want to say, PSA, that moment of terror is normal, and you will move through it and past it. And I actually kind of appreciate it thinking back, because it helps me realize how far I've come from not knowing anybody and feeling really scared about surviving and making my way on this campus to now feeling so comfortable about going back. I think it's really a mark of growth.
And so, just as a detailed note, what are a couple things you took with you to college that were supposed to be must-haves that you really didn't need? And what do you wish you had taken with you?
There are some pieces of furniture that I just still own, and I like schlep into every dorm room that I've lived in, and I just don't need them. Like, I have this lamp. It's a tall standing lamp. I've never turned it on, I don't think. Things that I did want. This is, like, very practical. I did want, like, those hanging lights in my room. Way better than a lamp.
Decorative hanging lights?
Decorative hanging lights, because okay. They light your room a lot better than some lamp in a corner will. I think I wanted to bring dishes, because a lot of dining halls don't let you take dishes back to your room. And I just didn't really think about that. I'm trying to think. There aren't actually a lot of dorm must-haves. A lot of the coolest dorm rooms that I've been in are ones where people, like, you know, make their own decorations and have stuff that just makes them feel comfortable. I wouldn't say that there's much of anything really that's the same from dorm room to dorm room to dorm room, but I can totally understand how when you're looking at, like, Pottery Barn or looking on Pinterest or something, it feels like, oh my gosh, is everybody going to have this weird corner lamp? Yeah, everyone will probably have it and no one will use it.
So, Jordan, take yourself back to your freshman year orientation. Getting to campus, what were you feeling at the time, and what was the turning point to finding your groove? How long did that take?
It took until the winter.
Okay.
When I started playing sports again, so that because I sort of found a community. So I think that's really crucial for anyone. Mm-hmm. But I'm, like, laughing at what Ashlyn's saying, because it's so true. You don't need anything. And, I mean, for me, I had two roommates. We were in a three-person dorm room, and so we all just kind of had to adjust our stuff. You know, and there's, like, things, oh, you go get – you think you need a printer, you think – but if you're lucky, there's, like, so many things that – and I imagine even more so now than when I was in college in terms of cloud sharing – printing, if you need it, your library will likely have it. There's so many things that you probably don't need.
How about the rug, the shag rug?
No.
And the decorative wall hangings?
I think you can decorate however you want if it makes you feel comfortable. But I think what's really crucial is being a respectful roommate. Mm-hmm. And I think that if something is, you know, you should always double check with your roommate, like, can I put this up? Is this annoying? Is this offensive? Do you like my music? You know, because there's so many things that you share. You share the air, you share music, you share everything. So you have to decorate and recreate and exist in a way that's respectful. I think from my experience, that was mostly what I took from it.
And I think, you know, one of the things that a lot of freshmen may or may not be prepared for, and you can both comment on this, is I don't know if we say to freshmen, this isn't going to be the best time of your life. It might be the most challenging or difficult or painful time in your life, because you're going to come into college and desperately want to make friends with your roommate and everyone in your hall, right? And then you'll find by the end of freshman year, none of those original people are your friend group that you finally found that space. Like, you know, is there anyone saying, this is probably going to be terrifying and difficult for three quarters? Because feeling good in winter, I think, is early. My experience with my students is that by about spring quarter, they're starting to look back and say, oh, I get this now. I mean, how long for you, Ashlyn, before you actually started to feel like this is okay? And was it the best year of your life?
So I was actually really pretty lucky in terms of finding groups of people when I first got to campus. I put a lot of feelers out, like, as soon as I got on campus, because my parents had been telling me, well, you really should get a job and you really should be doing all these things. And I'm a theater major. And so I was automatically involved with the theater group. So I made a lot of great friends. But even so, despite the fact that a lot of my best friends at school now are the same people who I met at the beginning of my Reed experience, I didn't feel the way I do now then. I still felt very much adrift and missing home and missing the sureness of people knowing who you are in your small high school, or that's at least what I experienced. I had a small core group of people who I had known since elementary school. Mm-hmm. And I didn't have to worry about them, you know, making a errant judgment because of something that I did or said or whatever. And I think that's just a constant worry when you're in college and you're meeting new people and you're trying to make really good first impressions with consistency. It takes a lot of energy that I just wasn't used to expending here because I had known all of my people for so long. And so I would say, yeah, it probably took me until after winter break to come back and feel like, okay, like, these are my friends, we know each other, we're not making first impressions anymore, which is just not a thing anyone ever really talks about. And I would say that first semester was great and it was fun. It was not the most fun time of my life, because there are so many things that you're worrying about and getting oriented to and trying to figure out and parse out and make your way through. And I am really glad that I went through it, but I was dealing with a lot of expectations that it would be, you know, the best party I'd ever been to. And that just wasn't true. I was looking at my friends' Facebook pictures and seeing them all excited and going, should I be super, super happy all the time? Because I'm not.
And from the parental perspective, you know, I think one of the most challenging things that technology offers is the temptation as a parent to want to text all day long and know that you're safe or know what you're doing. And so from the parental tips, you know, I wanted Kelly to know that we were here and supportive, but I said, I'm not going to text you. So I'm going to wait to hear from you. So I'd like to know that you're there and alive, but I'm not going to hound you. And also, if I do text you and you don't respond, that's just going to make me anxious. Mm-hmm. And I figured that out quite quickly, that it was worse to text and get no response than to not have any expectation and feel happy when she decided to check in. Would you say that is a great, you know, a good bit of advice? I mean, how do you do parental contact, or how did you do parental contact?
Yeah, I checked in every once in a while with my parents. I have like several siblings, so my parents don't reach out to me that often. They're not like, what are you doing, Jordan? You know, it's like, oh, nice to hear from you. So in that way, but of course they're thrilled when they hear from me. And I'm really, I would say that I am respectful and that I would like to get back to them when they text me. But I think that if you're a parent, particularly if it's your first kid going to school, mm-hmm. I think that's probably really terrifying.
It is.
I mean, I'm not a parent, so I don't know, but I imagine that it's terrifying and I imagine that it's hard. But yeah, I think that from your experience, Elizabeth, of sending Kelly a text message and being like, oh, well, why isn't she responding? What is she doing? Is she in some sort of danger? Is is maybe not a good use of time.
It is. It's the roughest lesson learned, I think, sending your kids off to college. And also wanting to make sure that they have spending money or, you know, are getting involved and getting jobs and doing all the things you're supposed to be doing. So I'm curious to know, you know, what was the thing that surprised you the most about college that you were most concerned about? Because I know, you know, we talked a lot about partying or parties or, you know, this idea that you get on college campuses and, you know, for the media makes us feel like it's one big debauchery, that it's just, you know, sex and drugs and rock and roll. And as soon as all the parents leave campus, the clothes come off and the raves begin. So where is the truth in that from your experience? And what should incoming freshmen, what do you wish you'd known about the scene, and what do parents need to know? And of course, it's from the Reed and a Cal Poly perspective, so we'll take that in consideration.
So I think based on the media that I had consumed before college, I was sort of expecting that at any college, you kind of have to be a part of that party scene to make friends and like an active part of that party scene. And that kind of scared me because, truth be told, I had never attended any sort of party in high school besides like a speech and debate party because I'm a nerd. So I got to college and I was like, oh my gosh, what am I going to do? Is anyone going to like me? And I quickly found out that the best way to be comfortable in any sort of like party situation, there are a lot of dances at Reed and just like big parties, and the best way to be comfortable and make friends and be social in that sort of situation is just to do what makes you feel comfortable, whatever that might be, whatever makes you feel safe and like you're having fun. And I have never felt judged for, you know, saying, oh, I don't really want to have a drink, or for saying like, oh, hey, let's just go dance. Like, we don't need to do anything else or whatever.
And of course, what is the rules about drinks?
Oh, if you are ever to have a drink, pour the drink for yourself. Make sure you see where it's coming from, the closed, untampered with container that it's coming from. And if for whatever reason you're like, oh, I got to go dance now, and you set down your drink, don't pick up that drink again. Get yourself another drink. Don't let your drink out of your sight if you're planning to continue to keep drinking from it. It's of the utmost importance, no matter what party that you're at, especially if it's a big party with a lot of people. Just
don't drink something that's handed to you.
Yeah, do not do that. Jungle juice, I would highly advise against. There's not frats or anything at my school, but my sister goes to Berkeley. And she said every frat party she ever went to, there's a big vat of jungle juice. No idea what's in there. Zero idea. Just pour yourself a drink. Do yourself a favor.
So although there is the opportunity to have kind of the debauched big rave party that parents fear, mm-hmm. or maybe parents who had great college experiences are saying, yay, can't wait to dive into the vat of jungle juice, right? Whatever your parental experience was. But your experience is that there's plenty of space to be at any level of socializing.
Yeah,
without
absolutely.
Stigma or feeling left out.
Mm, I think, honestly, the thing that would be the biggest party taboo would be to do something that makes you uncomfortable, mm-hmm. and then have to have people take care of you in a sort of like in a way that they weren't planning to have to do.
And what kind of training do you get as an incoming freshman about party behaviors? I mean, I imagine when these are all underage young people who technically may have had dreamy experiences, but legally probably should not have. Mm-hmm. And of course, the sexual, you know, freedoms of being on college. What kind of orientation do they give incoming freshmen about protocol or behavior?
So I know at most schools across the board, there are sort of online survey type classes that you have to take before you come to school. So at my school, there was a sexual assault prevention response type course like that. And then we actually didn't have an alcohol and other drugs online course, but I know most schools do. And the reason why we didn't have an online course is because there are multiple obligatory forums that you have to go to your first week at Reed, mm-hmm. Where you sit in a room and listen to the school's administrators and student leaders and all kinds of people in between talking about the practicalities of Reed's alcohol and other drug policy and the ways that alcohol and other drugs are used on campus sometimes. I think those sorts of orienting pieces of information were just so helpful for me as a freshman, because, like I said, I had never gone to a party before. I didn't really have any idea what it was like to be around people who were on those things, what the side effects would be that you would need to be worried about. Say somebody is like vomiting in the bathroom and they have alcohol poisoning. Like, a great thing to be able to do is recognize that and get help for them. But even that, I would have really not quite known what to do or what signs to look for had I not gotten that information. My school also does really, really great sexual assault prevention response orientation information, where you go to a lot of small group sessions on campus and have a person in like a 1 leader to 10 students ratio type group sit there and talk to you about consent and about the various ways that we really need to make sure that we as a community are putting effort into taking care of each other and honoring each other's wishes and wants. And that all was very new information for me, really, as a person who went to a pretty conservative, sheltered high school.
And I think, you know, my simple message to parents for moving their children from one spot to the other is to understand that everything is a process of change, that very rarely do we just seamlessly flow from one experience to the other, that there are supposed to be road bumps and those feelings of uncertainty and a bit of social anxiety, trepidation. You know, those are important signs that something is changing, that those are symptoms that we are no longer the person we were when we were in sixth grade or in freshman year in high school, that our body's discomfort, our psyche's discomfort is an indication that we are shifting and growing, right? That when our clothes get too tight, that is a sign that we are growing out of that old uniform and moving into a new one. And so if we can think of psychic discomfort as a growing pain, you know, of moving into a bigger shell or shedding an old skin, that psychic discomfort of anxiety or fear or trepidation is a healthy sign that something is brewing, there is something new. And that we don't want to prevent our children from having the experience of growth. We don't want them to not trust their ability to be resilient or trust their ability to navigate scary and new situations. We as parents have to keep breathing and smiling and trusting the process so that our children look at us and say, if my parents not freaking out, then I must be safe or I must be capable of figuring out the next stage. And so for us as parents, our job is to keep breathing and maintaining that position of confidence. I am confident in your abilities. And if you need a little boost, I'm here. But ultimately, I know you're capable. And if we can do that, we set the stage for our children to thrive and to succeed. And in knowing Ashton all this time and watching her progression through Reed and going into her junior year, what we didn't say is that Ashton is not just merely a theater major at Reed. She's also the student body president of the entire campus, which is pretty incredible for a sophomore to be elected student body president. And so I'm wondering now, what going in as a junior, you kind of own the school. So what do you see has been, you know, what have you shed of your old self? And what do you see are the changes you've come to? How have you changed as a person?
I think, how have I changed as a person? I have become a lot more certain of myself and the things that I think are right. I used to apologize a lot when I would share opinions, and I don't do that anymore. And I think part of that is just derivative of my time at Reed in general and the way that I've learned to be proud of what I think and what I've come to feel. And I think part of that is just because of my work in student body governance, I've become less afraid to be wrong. Being wrong is not a bad thing. In class, honestly, I think some of the most wonderful people in my classes and in student governance who I've interacted with are the people who are willing to put what they think out on the table, not apologize for it, have someone come up to them and say, oh, you know what, actually, I don't think that's the best idea, or I think that you maybe read that a little askew, or no, that's actually not what that chemical formula adds up to, whatever it is. And the person who wasn't correct can just graciously say, oh, thank you for pointing that out. And they don't have to apologize for asserting themselves. I think especially as a female in academia, that's been a really important realization for me. I was often really intimidated by, say, like strong male professors or strong male students in my classes or who I was conversing with in student body gov conversations. And I think I've really learned just, to be proud of the things that I think and the things that I feel, and to be gracious if somebody points out that those things maybe could use some tinkering with.
So your ego strength is such that you can take challenges or criticism probably better than you could when you're 18.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
I think there's a developmental piece in that also, that 18-year-olds tend to be a bit defensive, but then there's the growth of your own personal experiences to becoming more confident. So Jordan, transitioning then from the college world into independent life, what were the biggest shocks for you? And here you are now, you support yourself and live on your own and pay your own bills. What has changed for you since college, and how has life outside of college been the same or different than you expected?
That's a very good question, Elizabeth. I think that a lot of that process really began in college for me when I was working to pay for most of my expenses when I was a junior, I think. So it can be scary, but I think that a lot of what I've learned and how things have changed for me is that I have the tendency as a person to just want to sit and think about things a lot instead of do them. And of course, when I do it, it's fine. But my initial why I'm so reticent some things is sometimes is because I'm just scared to jump in, whatever the circumstances are. And now that practice, and whether it's a job, whether it's going to go interview someone, whether it's a personal relationship, I've learned to be more of a doer, because you have to be, you know, like a lot of things, a lot of greatness and a lot of good things that you do are born out of necessity. And I think that that is one thing I've certainly learned.
Now, do you feel when you graduated from college that you were prepared to be on your own and to make a life? And
no, I don't. Like, not at all. Graduating from college was not fun for me. Probably that had to do with like a mix of a lot of personal things in my life. And I think that sometimes it's a really exciting thing for some people. But I think that there's different pressures associated with it now. And I think it's kind of this absurd cutoff in our society. Just like a student entering college between the ages of 17 to 19 and being like, this is going to be great. And then it's not. Mm-hmm. And just like you're like, oh, you're in your 20s. This is awesome. You have a job. But, OK, we're terrified. We don't know what we're doing. A lot of us take jobs in sales, or we take jobs doing things that we think we're supposed to do because we're told that. That's been my experience with a lot of my friends, is that they're very unhappy even though they have a degree and they're working in something and they're making enough money to get by and they have insurance and they have all these things that they're supposed to have. But sometimes there's a missing element. That's not the case for all my friends, but I think that's a pretty good theme for a lot of people, because we do things because we think we're supposed to do them. I didn't start working here immediately after college. I was like, you know, working in food service and then started interning and volunteering my time here. And then I got a job. But for me, I wasn't following the traditional path of like, I'm going to get a job to get a job, because I knew I didn't want to do that.
And I think that that's, you know, I don't want to cast a pall on young life, but I think it's an important message to understand that college does not guarantee the greatest time in your life, that there's a lot of heartache and struggle and learning about yourself and disappointment and failure. And then you have moments where it's awesome, where you're elected president of the student body or you have a radio show. And then you graduate from college. And again, that's another time where we tell young people, you can do anything you want in your life now. This is the best time in your life. Go love it. But it's not, because a lot of you have student debt that immediately is a hindrance from freedom because you have to start paying it off. There aren't a lot of dream jobs right off the bat. You really more than likely are going to start at the apprentice level or volunteering, and that's a fact of life. Housing is expensive. You know, relationships are a challenge because we've told you, don't settle down with anyone. Wait, wait, wait. It'll come to you. But the relationships don't just magically fall in your lap post-college.
Yeah. And this is a theme that I think we talk about as people, and generally sometimes you talk about this on your show, and that I heard a quote one time that like I try to think about often, and it resonates with me a lot, and it's that comparison is the thief of joy. And that
great quote.
Yeah, isn't that good?
Yeah, I'm writing it down.
But I'm privy to what a lot of people are doing just because of the social media platforms that I engage in and have access to and peruse. But I always have to remind myself, do I want to be doing that? Do I want to be getting married? Do I want to be, do I want to have that job? Do I want to make that money, or, you know, whatever it may be? And I think it's great. You also need to celebrate other people when they are making those choices, because that is awesome for them. And I think that when I was 18, I thought I was going to be doing something way different when I was 25. And I'm happy now, you know, so I'm okay with what I'm doing, but my expectation was not this. But I'm happy. I'm thrilled with what I'm doing.
But you have to change your expectations.
Yeah. I just didn't know.
And I do think that we set the bar of expectations very high, that we've told a lot of you, get that degree and you're going to be a CEO by the time you're 30, or that everything will magically fall into place. Mm-hmm. And it's interesting because your energy level, when I got to that question of how did it turn out to be the same or different, totally changed. That clearly this resonates with you of needing to find contentment within your own life, because it wasn't just going to fall into your lap.
I think I struggle with that. I think a lot of my friends struggle with that. And I think a lot of our conversations in supporting one another surrounds this subject for all of us who are, you know, 2 years younger than me or 3 years older than me. A lot of us are really in the same bubble. And that's kind of just a reality of a lot of things set up for us because of the generation we're in.
Absolutely.
Among other things.
So what did you need? What did you need at college that would have, a class, a seminar, a relationship, a mentor? What did you need that would have maybe made this transition smoother for you from collegiate life to independent adult life? And same with you, Ashley. Think about the same. What are you going to need from Reed, do you think, to help smooth that path?
Yeah, I think that a lot of college broke me down. A lot of it did. I think that playing sports was really hard for me initially because I wasn't the best. I certainly wasn't the smartest kid. What I think I needed was understanding more so that me being myself was going to be more crucial to my career and my future than anything else was going to be in a checklist of success, so to
speak. Of accomplishments, yeah, or prizes.
And so I think that knowing what you're about, or at least seeking that, is really crucial. And I think that that happened based in life and in a few of my classes that I was able to get some of those things. But that didn't happen until I was like maybe a senior. Mm-hmm.
So it's a slow roll. And for you, Ashlyn, so where do you see, you know, you're going into this year of presidency? What are your hopes and expectations for your last 2 years at Reed, and where do you hope it propels you to?
Well, I'm hoping that I'll be able to spend some more time sort of taking from the school what I can to help make my life beyond read an exciting and great one. One of the best things about being student body president is that you get to pour a lot into the school. Mm-hmm. So as I transition out of that role, I will be the new person will be elected in January. So as I transition out of that role, I think I'm going to transition into a time of really trying to plumb all of the resources at Reed that I can and make my life into one that continues to be a search for knowledge and excitement like Reed encouraged students to be outside of Reed's walls. And I don't necessarily know exactly what that will mean or entail. I really would like to work in theater and making documentary theater about like our current social situation and current events. And I think there's a lot of cool change to be made out in the world with theater as a vehicle. And so I'm hoping to do some creative work at Reed and just really make the best use that I possibly can of all of the resources that are afforded to me in college, because that's one thing that I think is very true when people tell you that college is one of the times in your life when you have the largest set of resources at your fingertips. Mm-hmm. And I'm going to continue trying to put a lot of work into making my school the best that it can be and a wonderful place for students to come and feel safe and welcome and empowered and challenged. And I'm also going to try and take as many chances and opportunities as I can.
So if you had a do-over of one or two things, both of you, over the course of maybe your college experience or transitioning into your adult life, Jordan, and for Ashlyn going into your freshman year, one or two tips, if you wanted to pass them on, what would they be? Things you've learned that would have been helpful?
I'm going to think about this.
Okay. What about you, Ashlyn?
You don't need to hold on to every friendship that you ever had before you got to college. Sometimes you go from communicating with your best friend in high school every day to communicating with them only a couple times a month. And that's okay. You can still be friends that way. You don't need to latch on to everything that was in your life before and keep it exactly the same as it was before you left. In fact, in order to have the head and heart space that you need to take on college as fully as you probably want to, you're going to have to let some of those relationships change, and that's okay. Just be ready to be a little surprised. No matter how many New York Times articles you read or reluctant therapist shows you listen to or BuzzFeed articles you peruse, you'll never know exactly what college is like until you get there. And everybody who goes to your school is going to have a completely unique and individual experience. And if your school is anything like my school, which I'm sure that it is in some way or another, your experience there will be what you make it. So go in with an open mind and you'll do awesome.
All right, 30 seconds, Jordan.
Yeah, I would say that don't do what you think you're supposed to do.
I love that.
yeah. And, you know, challenge your preconceived notions about a lot of things. And you might find that you can find a lot of common ground with people and a lot of separation with people. But get to know people, get to know subjects well, because that's how you're going to inform your future experiences.
Go in with a lot of open-mindedness. Mm-hmm. And this has been a conversation with a reluctant therapist. Thanks to my guests, Ashlyn Hatch, Jordan Bell. Thank you for being part of this conversation. I look forward to speaking to you again next week. And thank you for supporting Public Radio KCBX.